Yeah, he got some.
He's like looking
some,
at.
He got some. He got some poop on his penis.
He does poop. On, oh my god!
But like they.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about like probably. Something that I know you're going to really love. I guess we should run an intro first. Hi, I'm the Weeb Crew. Wait, no, fuck.
No. Yes, he is the Weeb Crew with the record show. He is John Weeb Crew.
Hi, I am John. Hi, welcome to the Weeb Crew. I'm your host, John Weeb Crew. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jerry Weeb Crew.
Jerry Weeb Crew. I like when people like, refer to us as like a single individual.
It's like oh, yes, it's very
people have said what an asshole he is. It's like he
which one? Our pronouns are in our bio very clearly. Please respect them. Okay, this account is ran by two people. You will use they them pronouns because that's just how English works, dog.
They think it's like serious, so then they don't fucking like address it, and then they start calling us by like he. And then it's like, dog, there are two people. Who are you talking about?
Who are you talking about? It's funny also because when we talk to people in DMs, we'll both be replying to them. And it'll be kind of confusing sometimes because it's like, wait, who am I talking to right now? It's like, you don't understand. It's like two people. So think of it as like we're like a dissociative identity disorder like system. I think that's what it's called. All
right. Is this Moomy in the room with us right now?
He is Norman Oswald, and I am trans rights Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Anyway, let's talk about the anime that your favorite anime of the year or something. Bon.
Oh yeah, Bon came out recently.
Bon came out. We were going to talk about it like last episode, but we had the anime men on and we touched on it a little bit. We didn't really get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. We have some thoughts. I guess, what did you think of the Giguk anime, Mumi?
Put me to sleep.
Put you to sleep. I don't think that's the anime's fault. I think that's your fault. I'm going to be completely real with you.
Listen, you have right. like I've been working are, 6 you days are one a week.
you sleepy motherfucker. You know
how many overtime hours I've gotten in the last month?
No, boo-hoo, boo-hoo, fucking wagey wage cook. Woo, boo-hoo, I have to work overtime to feed my 7 kids. Boo-hoo.
Listen, I don't have 7 kids. I have one
kid. I gotta go work at the fucking coal mine and get fucking black lung and die in my mid-30s. Boo-hoo.
I mean, that's...
But yeah, I really liked Bon. I thought it was nice. It wasn't like the craziest thing ever, but you know what? It's 20 minutes long and it's a 20 minutes well spent. It's a nice, just a little story.
I'm like, whatever on it. I don't really know why, like outside of like just saying you did it, I don't really know why it exists. Like, as like a what would you call it? A thesis or
like a statement or something.
Reason d'etre or something, I guess.
What the fuck? Okay, like, you just several languages. Those neither of those are English.
Well, that was reason d'etre or whatever is. I don't even probably saying it right. It's like French.
If this is a white podcast. You will speak white, okay?
Listen, this is an anime podcast. I picked that up from Ergo Proxy. It's fine. It's all.
It's fine.
No, but I don't really know why it exists outside of just I could. Like, as far as like an actual statement,
a lot of money to make something.
Yeah, like outside of like I could make it, and so we made it. Yeah. I don't really know what it's doing that. I don't want to say like justifies its existence because you don't really need to justify something's existence, but like no. It doesn't feel like it's saying anything, if that makes sense. I'm just like, all right, that was.
Me, it's like it's very clear what it's doing, and I think what's interesting about it is that it is Giguk, and when you look at it in that context, what it is makes a lot more sense, because it's basically taking the kinds of things that like the more dedicated Western anime fandom has been enamored with to some extent for the better part of a decade now. And those two things are Isekai and Makoto Shinkai.
Yeah.
And because that's basically what it is, in a sense. You have like a lot of like the Shinkai-isms in terms of like the separation between time and like terms of time and
name as an isekai.
With like there's like a time, not really travel thing, but there's like a time discrepancy, I guess. The way it's structured is actually kind of cute to watch, because like it's, you don't initially, you think that these two stories are happening like side by side, and then like, and like the last like bit of it, you realize, oh no, this was actually happening before that, and it like recontextualizes stuff. So in terms of just like delivering just like a nice little like experience, I think it's perfectly fine. Again, yeah, it's not really making any sorts of like particularly like grand state. It's not like a Japanese boy who draws or anything. But I think even if you were to remove Gigguk's name from this, well, if you were to do that, one, I don't think anyone would give a flying fuck about it, because this is not the kind of fucking thing that your average anime fan really cares about. But it would still be, it's still definitely the kind of thing that like we would watch if this was just like a graduation short or something like, remember those Fascinating Days like shorts that we watched like however long ago, like something like that.
Yeah, but those were like more fun. Like this one,
yes,
it wasn't like as visually expressive. Like it's nice looking. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's also
it's kind of very commercial, I guess.
Yeah, it's not particularly like explorative in terms of like the medium of animation, which when it comes to something like this, when you only have 20 minutes to work with, it's really hard to just tell like a story and be particularly invested in it. And the audio visual presentation is going to be picking up just a lot of the emotional investment, which is why you can have something like like Gon the Little Fox. You know, that's like only 15 minutes, but it's a children's story and it's wonderful stop motion animation. Or what was that thing that we watched? The First Line, that thing that was directed by China, the entire country of China. Well, that's only like 10 minutes, but it has it's kind of a cheap concept in a sense, because it is about animation. Wow, how innovative. But it's also very visually expressive and interesting at the same time. So
yeah, that's how a lot of these shorts go. It's like the shorts is usually like the visuals almost sort of predate or pre, I don't know what the fucking word I'm
precede.
Looking for is there.
They take priority.
Precede the story. Yeah, it's like you're wanting to like explore or like do some kind of like experiment with some animation in some way. And so you almost kind of like form the story to fit around the visual,
whatever this animator like, idea that you have.
Because Gigguk had this idea
for a story that he pitched around. I think he initially pitched it to like Kadokawa and stuff. I guess they turned him down. He financed this whole thing by himself, by the way, which is surprising to me, because that would be really, even if it's only 20 minutes, that's really fucking expensive. He said like, I don't want to.
He said like 500,000.
Probably. He spent what would more or less amount to a nice home in Northern Virginia to get this made all by himself, which is not a responsible use of money, but more power to him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I'm like, I don't want to say like steel manning necessarily, but like taking about as much of it as I can. I do get like, it is, like you said, it is very Gigguk in, I can feel like he's telling a story of like, what's the term?
I don't know.
Immigration kind of thing. Like going to a new place.
That's obviously a theme. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's like,
but it's not really, I don't know what it's saying about that per se. It didn't really go into detail
about what it wants to say about it, but it is like very fleshed out. And because like you got her and like him, they both go on these journeys of like they feel they need to go on to find themselves. They find new sense of purpose, a new sense of belonging in these new area places they go to. It turns out like I can get that from like an immediate sort of thing, like from the story itself. Like that is like the main thing. And I think that's interesting because that is something very Western. Like it's not something that you really get in a lot of anime stories. Like it's not exploring these themes displacement.
Most Japanese people are not immigrants.
Yeah, they don't. Japan is a country you don't necessarily need to immigrate from or want to immigrate from. And then the people that are in Japan making anime are not generally. I mean,
I think like the author of No Game, No Life is from Brazil, if I remember correctly. He's like one of those. He's like, I think his parents are Japanese, and like Brazil has a lot of like Japanese immigrants, and then people immigrate back to Japan. It's fucking weird. There's a history there. I don't fully understand it.
So you do get like a unique perspective that is weird that with as much isekai as there is, that's not really explored much. And that the like immigrant same kind
aspect.
Of, yeah,
it's usually more when it's done, it's usually more like imperialist in nature, where like they take over take over the world with their like superior Japanese food or whatever. It's usually very like silly things.
It's weird because like they do kind of touch on it, like because like I think of like a Mushoku Tensei where he's kind of like getting used to the world or whatever.
But also like something like that where it's like reincarnate, like that's a different system ultimately from something like this where it's a portal that can be transited both ways essentially. Like the other world is functionally just another country in a sense.
It probably has to do with the fact that it is like with isekai, they're not generally there's not that transfer, like you can't go back and forth. And so it loses that kind of aspect of migration where it's like you know, your family is in a country tens of thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
You can still talk to them. You can write them, but now you're like separated by time zones. You don't get to talk to them as much as you would like. Maybe.
There's probably some stuff that like that deals with that kind of like theming more. It'd be like a question for like Joe or like a Gil who like knows more.
Yeah, I'm not saying about, that it's like, not the genre. No isekai's ever done that. It's just interesting that I've not actually come across that more frequently in isekai. You know what I mean? Like as much as the premise is so similar to that, it's just interesting that they never really kind of explore that aspect as much.
I think that also gets into like another kind of weird thing about this is that like when we talk about isekai, most isekai are initially conceived as like web novels, just kind of written like amateurly, just like as a hobby. Those get picked up as light novels, a little bit more professional, and then maybe get a manga adaptation, and then they get an anime adaptation. Whereas this kind of circumvents that process and it just goes straight to anime. And it makes me wonder then, does it kind of then come across as like a little weird? Is it like, oh, maybe he hasn't like paid his dues or whatever, where it would be almost more interesting if this was like a story, like he was writing as like a light novel or a web novel over like, cause this took like 2 years to make, maybe more. But if he was doing something like that over a protracted period of time and kind of rose up through the ranks in that sense, and then eventually got some sort of like anime adaptation, would that then make more sense? It would certainly make it fall, I think, more in line with what we kind of see with isekai, because there's a very, like, you look at something like Zenshu. Zenshu has a very different feel from like a lot of like the other like isekai or even just not all fantasy in general that we see. Or even looking at stuff like Isekai Oji-san as well, which is like a manga adaptation that also has like a different feel to it.
I wonder if you even include something like Zenshu as an isekai. I mean, like technically it is, and it being anime then puts it more in line with that. But like, it really is kind of more in line with some like the Pagemaster or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, there are Isekai where people get like reincarnated, like that, like Death March, like the guy gets reincarnated into the like game that he's made, like, or the a world that's basically just like it. So,
well, she's not reincarnated. Like, she literally is like just in the hospital having like a sucked fever in, dream kind of thing. Yeah. Well, she's not. I don't think she, I mean, it makes it kind of ambiguous, but like,
I don't even
think she's. I think she's just kind of comatose and is having. So
it's like even in terms of it being like in a stat, like Log Horizon, would be like another example. I think Overlord as well. Like,
well, I mean, Log Horizon that, literally like, is a that is a different situation. They're not in the game. They are literally just in a world that. Like
that resembles the game,
So it's like that. I'm just being like, Zenshu or I guess
Alice, the Alicization arc of Sword Art Online. but there is that like, kind of like structural element to isekai, kind of like in terms of like the production pipeline that this also lacks, and you can kind of tell just in terms of like the fantasy world, you can tell there's like a lot more. To the lore of the world, and you're kind of only given like glimpses into it. In some sense, it's kind of like, why is this thing happening? I was personally perfectly fine just watching and being like, oh yeah, that must be something that just happens when the sky dragon needs to reincarnate in the egg thing. Sure, that track. I understand. I just accept this implicitly.
I mean, that might be like a actual thing.
It might be culture. Like more because I know like part of this was also like based in like Thai mythology. Giga being Thai, right? I'm not getting that wrong. I'm not being horribly racist. I think so. Yeah. I think it was obviously like very much drawing from that as well.
I mean, I think he said in an interview, like he wanted to have that influence in Bon. So that might be just aesthetic, but it could be like actually drawing from mythos or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Obviously,
as a viewer, we don't know and didn't really go into
I'm not an expert on Thai mythology. If someone is, please let us know. Overall, I thought it was like a nice little thing. It is surprised me like how people are like, this is like one of my favorite anime now. Oh, this impacted me emotionally so much, and I'm just like
it just reminds you that this is like so anything is literally someone's first anime.
Yeah,
that's all I could think of.
I think part of that is also just the fact that it is Gigak, and maybe there's like a degree of like parasociality there and being so happy to see that, like, you know, he went from like being like a YouTuber to getting an actual like anime made. Probably like something that also people are like emotionally invested in to some degree. Personally, I mean, I've always said that, you know, if I was like an insanely rich like Bitcoin millionaire, if I had like Elon Musk, Larry Ellison money, I would just be funding anime left and right. Not even like as my own personal creative project. I'd just be throwing money at shit and be like, I don't know, this person seems interesting. I'd give him $5 million. Let's see what he does.
Let's see what he can do.
Let's see what it can do.
I'm just like
a fucking like Venetian merchant just commissioning things and like, I don't know. You see, he smiled at me. How can I not?
Listen, I can tell creativity, and he's got his eyes, right?
Wait, what do you mean about his eyes?
Of creativity.
Vision. Okay, but it's just weird because he's like Asian, so it's weird for you to like specifically.
Why did you assume he was Asian? We're pulling people off the street.
We're talking about making anime, so I presume that like this is someone on the street in Japan.
Oh my god!
And Japanese people tend to be Asian.
Fucking canceled us.
I'm sorry. I made the podcast too political. Here is a formal official apology. I will now commit ritual suicide using a 44 Magnum placed firmly at the roof of my mouth.
As is per usual. Yeah.
Speaking of wanting to kill myself, City ended.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Is this your anime of the decade, Mumi? How do you feel? I loved it. You were more into it than me, though.
I loved it. I don't know if it's my anime of the decade yet. I'm gonna figure that out.
Yeah, it's like that in day to day.
I basically just have them right next to each other right now. I'm just trying to feel out how I feel after.
What I would say is that they both feel, both day to day and city, feel like generational anime, something that's like you don't get these every day, basically. City, despite being an adaptation, though, it has like the energy of an original production, just with all like the weird changes and the way they choose to like adapt. So the second half of this last episode was a musical. Like, how crazy is that? Just so many like weird, like insane things that it's like, it's, if anything, it's kind of doomer pilling me in the fact that this feels like it was nowhere near as popular as something like Nichijou was like back in the day. Like,
Nichijou wasn't very popular either. It kind of grew with like KyoAni's reputation. It kind of grew a cult following.
Sure, but I mean, you look at like the My Anime List charts, and it's like it's one of the top shows of the season. You look at the My Anime List charts for this season, it's like you got to scroll down quite a long way. Maybe that'll change. Maybe it's one of those things that people, you know, like a fine wine, people will appreciate more over time, or not, and it'll just be kind of like this like more weird obscure thing, at least among Western fans. Certainly no fucking like shonen fan is watching it, but probably if they did, they would be very confused.
Where are the hype moments in Aura?
Where it's literally the entire show is hype moments in Aura, you fucking Philistines. Jesus Christ.
What do you mean? Where's Gojo?
I'm killing you. I'm killing you.
I liked, they kind of did the Kinero Mosaic thing. Where that show in the first season, did it end in the first half is one story of the last episode, and then the second half is just a musical.
Oh.
Like it basically did the same thing.
Did the same thing. That's funny. Like,
oh, it did the Kinero Mosaic.
I mean, we were literally like the first scene of this last episode, I was just like looking at me and like, oh, I could edit this so easily into the final scene of Evangelion. Oh, that'd be so easy to edit. It's like the easiest show to just key out stuff because of how bold like the line work and colors are. There's like no gradients or anything. So you can just like easily like magic wand tool stuff out. But yeah, it's not really a show that, it's not like my favorite anime of the year, but it's one that I look at and I go, God damn, KyoAni can just fucking like lock in and just dog walk all of the competition just in terms of like sheer like production quality. So even if I'm not like laughing out loud at every joke, like something that like I would with like Apocalypse Hotel, I'm still just kind of like marveling at how well it's made, and the fact that just like they're just willing to do weird shit, and I really just admire that. Just like,
yeah,
adapting things in like bizarre, borderline offensive ways. Like if the mangaka was not involved in the production, I feel like people would have fucking like pitchforks out, given they do stuff like they cram an entire volume of the manga that takes place on an island into just a joke at the end of the episode, where it's just a series of like next episode previews one after the other, and you don't know when it's gonna end, and it just keeps going, and I felt like I was losing my mind.
Even the last episode I had like that experimental animation. Well, I don't say experimental, it's not like off the wall, but you know, different animation styles.
Different animation styles. I mean, even nine? Doing the like a musical is still like weird.
Yeah.
I think it was like episode 9. And it's such a wonderful way to close it. Episode 9, which one was that?
With the drone shot or whatever?
Oh, are you talking about the race?
Yeah, the race was episode
9. Yeah, the race was crazy. And then I think it was episode 5 is the one with like the tower, and then it does all like the like split screen stuff. Like that's also just really crazy. Just stuff that like you don't see that in other anime. Even other anime originals, you don't see like that level of like bizarreness to it. Like the closest, like in terms of like that inventiveness that I could think of would be like the Tommy Galaxy, for example, with all like the weird visual stuff, or like Bakemonogatari, with just like all the weird like visual stuff that it does with that. And it's like,
yeah,
this is like kind of, even though it looks so similar to like Nichijou in a lot of regards, it's still, there's nothing really quite like City, if I'm going to be honest.
No, that it very much is. I mean, it's a lot like Nichijou.
In terms of like, the humor and stuff,
pretty much everything outside of like, I don't think Nichijou gets quite as eclectic, but it does do a lot of like different style, like Sakuga animation and shit. I don't think it's not quite like, I can't think of like any kind of like the towers like being like an actual object.
Yeah, which is evidently that was an idea that the mangaka was just like, what if we did this? And they're just like, okay, right. Sure. What? Who let you in here?
I mean, that's going to cost us an extra $30,000, but sure.
He's just like writing a check.
All right.
Whatever. It's also just like the ensemble aspect to it, where like there's all of the, it's a very defined cast still, but there's all these like different characters and they're all very well, like well defined still, despite how large it is. It's just like seeing how they can interact in chaotic ways.
This is a good example of why like tropey kind of characters and archetypes exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does lean pretty heavily on that for its large ensemble cast, but it does it in a way, like characterize them in a way that they don't just feel just like really cheap and just like, okay.
Yeah. They have fairly like dynamic interactions still.
Yeah. It uses the database elements to kind of inform their general character. So it feels like you're getting a glimpse into kind of the whole mode of operandi for the show, right? Like it's like you're getting a glimpse at this one little aspect of this person's life in this one aspect of the city kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It does accomplish like keeping the sense of scale where it does feel like you're in somewhere, but it feels like there's a lot of other shit going on. You could just be following just as well, which is why you get the 13 fucking screen split screen. Like, look, you can be following all this at the same time.
And it's like that's great of you. Also, fuck you. Like someone who just feels like trolling the audience. And I feel like we don't get enough anime that troll the audience. Like I've always talked about, like, we're never gonna get another Endless Eight. And it feels like, and of course it's KyoAni doing this, and this feels like the closest that we've gotten to something like that. Even though it doesn't do that, but it's still doing like weird stuff that feels like it's intentionally trying to alienate the audience. And I like stuff that just scares the hose.
Well, it's intentionally alienating the audience in a way that takes a lot of effort.
Yes, it's a high like effort fucking Endless Eight.
Because like you could do, like there are plenty of shows that you could be like, oh, this alienated the audience because of the fucking CGI bear or something.
Yeah.
There are not a lot that you could point to be like, wow, they put a lot of money and effort into making something that is very questionable as far as how consumable it is. But nobody would question the amount of fucking like time, effort, budget, like all this shit that went into it.
Yeah. And for me, that's why I say like this is like, even if it's not like my anime of the decade or really, I don't even be in my top 10 of the decade. I'll have to check.
Holy but shit.
I'd have to check. I don't know. But I still look at it and go, God damn, this is something that we're never going to see something like. And I think it's like, even though there are anime that I like Vinland Saga, I like Vinland Saga more than this. We're going to get more Vinland Saga eventually. We might not get any more City. This might be like a one and done thing. And in that sense, it's like, it's just something that comes and goes, and you just kind of look at it and you go, man, that was an experience. And I'm glad that I got to be here and watch it as it aired, you know, because you only get to do that once.
Yeah, it's like something like Vinland Saga. It's like you kind of dip in and out. Right. Like you come in and you're like, oh, look, I can see it's getting closer to the top or whatever. And then like you dip out for a while, you come back like, oh, we're going closer. This was like. Yep. You dip in and just like all of a sudden you're at the fucking top of the mountain and then you dip out and you're like, it's done. That's it.
Done. It's over. It's gone. It was like a unicorn.
Hope you enjoyed it.
It's gone. And I'll probably figure out some way. I hope they do like a real, I feel like they'll do like a really nice physical release for this. This feels like a show that like you could pack in like a lot of like special features as well. They have a commentary track. I'm going to shit and piss and cum everywhere. Because I would love to hear about the fucking production of this. I think they started on like their English Twitter account, like posting like Q&As with like the director, which has been fun to read. Just something I look at it and I go, I mean, you have this is something you just have to watch. It's not even like,
yeah.
Like if you're an anime fan. You have to watch it. There's no there's no negotiating this. Like it's not like Frieren is something where in terms of like the community response and how hard that blew up, that was like very surprising. But I'm also not going to say that like again we're going to get more Frieren. There's always going to be more Frieren on the horizon. Now we're getting like Boichi the Rock, similar kind of example, but now we're getting like a season two and it's like, okay. And then I'll say that like that dilutes it or makes it like less special. But there is something about like seeing something like City and just being like, God damn, like Boichi does, I think, come close in terms of like the experimentalism and like all the weird gags and stuff that they do. City goes even farther. At no point watching Boichi was I just like, what the fuck are they doing? Why were they? What? Who approved this? The fact that this was allowed on television is shocking to me. People talk about like that with like Nuki Tashi or whatever. No, the fucking split screen stuff in City is something that I look at and I go, how did this make it through? How did no one put the brakes on this? Rather than just like
up. We talked up the stuff when they did that in Boichi, where it was like, damn,
yeah,
they were so inventive. This is like that ramped up to 11.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's fucking insane constantly. It's
and it's Boichi not that it's was necessarily like cool. Doing like the zoetrope shit or anything like that that Boichi does in terms of like that like extreme kind of like mixed media kind of thing. It does all of this while still remaining also pretty style. Even when it veers off style, it still feels so consistent and makes like just so much like internal sense. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. There's an internal consistency to it.
Yeah. Instead of just like completely veering off and like, you know, when Boichi does like, he like regresses to like CG and then flies through some bricks. Like that's a funny gag. This is able to do that and then not have return to CG, but still make it, like feel just as experimental and like on the edge of like this is could fall apart at any moment,
while also like having the same amount of budget put into like the most mundane scenes.
Yes, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like all fucking hell.
It's so like every gag feels like it was given like just an insane degree of care and attention. And it really just comes through when watching it. We're like I said, even though I'm not like laughing out loud at it, it's not like really my kind of humor. I'm still like looking and I'm just going, fuck man. Kyohan, you really are the goat. Just fucking.
Well, everyone
glazes like wit. Are you fotable? No one's touching Kyohan.
No. I think we might have talked about this on an episode, maybe not. I don't think the humor of Nichijou and City of the Animation is necessarily the funniest. Like it's not a matter of, like there's definitely jokes in something like Cromartie or something, right? That like if I sit there and break down and analyze, I'm like, this is objectively more funny or whatever the fuck you want to say, right?
Yeah. Like, well, like I was like jokes. when they introduced like the new like nerd character in Don the Don, I was laughing like way harder at that than anything I laughed at in City. But again, City is just like such eye candy.
City uses its humor as like toner or like a flavor almost, where it's like it primes the audience more so than actually is making them like laugh out loud. Like there are some moments I laughed at, maybe more of like a chuckle or whatever. It's not necessarily supposed to be like, oh my god, this is the funniest, most witty joke I've ever seen. It's just more like, this is nice. This is a nice feeling. Nice. I'm enjoying myself. Not overanalyzing anything. It's just like you let the feeling and the pathos kind of wash over you. It's just a wash nice over you experience and overall.
And you just admire the stunning animation.
Yeah, that's part of what makes it work. Is like it's such just like a visceral experience that you're engaged with it visually, and it not being complicated as far as like the writing goes or like jokes or anything like that is not getting in the way of it being this like visceral kind of comfy experience, right? It's almost more in line with like an Aria the Animation or something, but just more frenetic and like energetic and kind of dealing with more
humor. The humor, even though it is very energetic and over the top, does have that kind of like Iyashike quality to it. You know, because I could see like if it was being like super complex and stuff, if it was doing like the weird shit of like Joshiraku, well, then still having the same level of like production as this, it would be overstimulating. And I mean, City does get fucking overstimulating, but that's when it's like completely intentional and they go, it's a full fucking measure. They do it. And I'm like, this is a fucking assault on the senses.
I mean, for context, I think like the thing that stands out in some like Cromartie for me is the fucking gag where they're talking about like monkeys being intelligent enough to like use a ladder to get a banana or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then they start trying to logistically work out how that would actually work. And then they're like, well, I can't get and it leads into the punchline of the fucking monkey student actually getting a ladder and doing it. They're like, oh, fuck, we're dumber than a monkey or whatever. Like that. That sort of wit versus like City, the part was in episode 10 or 11 where she's just doing the Mambo number 5 thing.
Yeah.
It was just fucking her just picking up a fucking tea kettle, go bap, bap, bap. Like that's the part that's like, that kind of stuff sticks out me more in City. Whereas like something like Cromartie Animation that sticks out. So it's like, that just kind of tells you the difference in the humor, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great show. We've been glazing it. We also finished The Summer Hikaru Died, first season. Really good. One of the few like horror anime that I watch, and I'm like genuinely unsettled at stuff while watching it. It's just like, I feel like a lot of anime, they tend to like, when they do horror, they rely on like very like over the top stuff, usually like gore, things like that. Whereas the way that the horror in this is handled is actually very interesting to me, in that the visuals of the show are honestly very reminiscent of something like Chainsaw Man. That's very like grounded, very realistic looking, which initially was kind of like a turnoff for me. But watching it more, I'm realizing more that it's like, That works well for horror, but then the way that they do like the scary shit is, one, it feels more in line with video games, which is interesting just because, I mean, video games are animation, and it's handling its visual language, even though it has this very like grounded, realistic kind of cinematic look to it. There's still a lot of visual aspects to it that are things that you can only really accomplish in animation, and it will often communicate its horror in that way as well, where you'll get like certain like parallaxing or like the way things will be out of focus, or just like the kind of like visceral imagery of it is very interesting.
It also just knows how to ground its horror in a way I think a lot of anime generally don't.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, I would say a lot of people would say like something like Yami Shibai is one of the better horror anime.
I was thinking almost like
scares and stuff.
I was thinking like Mononoke has some stuff in it. Like, in, I think it's the second arc of Mononoke where, you know, when they're on the boat and that fucking fish thing with the guitar comes up and it's like, it's subjecting everyone to like their worst horrors. And I think one woman just envisions herself having like a miscarriage. I'm like, yeah, that's fucking like stomach churning. You know, or even like the conceptual stuff, like even if it's not like showing you something, it's describing to you like a just a really uncomfortable, disgusting thing. And that hits harder for me, at least, than just outright showing something that's fucking horrific.
Right. But this grounds it really well in like its emotional kind of core. Mm-hmm. So like you are not really engaged with the horror aspect. Like the story itself is grounded in this kind of pseudo romance. Like it's not
pseudo romance. Really, like, it's very tragic is what it is. It's a very like, when you break it down, this is like a really like sad story that especially comes through like in this last episode where, yeah, Hikaru basically realized like, oh yeah, no one has been able to mourn the real Hikaru, because he just, everyone just thinks that I'm the real Hikaru. So no one is like, he doesn't kind of get that like remembrance. And the people who do know that Hikaru actually died, they don't really get that kind of closure.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting aspect to it as well. But in terms of just like the visual stuff that like unsettles me, like the shot that I think sticks in my head the most is when there's that guy that's just like naked outside of the school with like a knife or something. And he's just like so far away and he's like shaded differently from like all like these other characters that are like surrounding him. And he's like moving, his like mouth is like moving this uncomfortable way. And it doesn't even look like he's like properly like aligned with like how like the ground should be. It's really unsettling stuff. And then you see him like slit his throat or something in the distance. And it's like, oh, it leaves so much up to the imagination. That it's like, you can kind of reckon, or like when they're in the forest, and there's that one monster with like the head, it's kind of like waving back and forth. And again, it's just in the distance, out of focus. And again, that feels like something that you would see in like a video game, something like Slender Man, because that's just like, that to me is just really unsettling imagery. The fact that there's something disturbing, but it's like, you can't quite make it out, which makes it even like more uncanny as a result.
I always think of like the interview that they did for just making a Silent Hill 2, where the director of that game, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he is talking about how to shake the human heart deeply. You have to use sex and death, essentially.
Okay.
And so I was thinking about that with this, because like a lot of it, it's almost like a double entendre of sorts.
Oh, I mean, let's be real. It's not even subtext. It's just text. There's like,
basically, but like it has a double meaning to it. Cause like,
yeah,
he's literally like looking at it. Like one of the scenes that really stood out was like them being in the classroom after he put his hand inside of his chest cavity or whatever. And like,
yeah,
the monster thing was in there, whatever the fuck.
Yeah, he got some.
He's like
He got some poop on his penis.
Oh my god! But like they use that, and then like he's later he's like looking at him, and it has like that kind of sexual undertone to it. So like you look at it, and like on the surface, you could just be like, oh, he's just like checking him out or like sneaking a glance or whatever. And then they're talking about being inside him and how it felt inside him or whatever. All this stuff is like layered in a way that like it kind of is like the Donadon thing that we talked about, where I was talking about how they incorporated that sort of like, they primed the audience and incorporated that sort of like SA imagery to where you can feel that sort of like violation that the character is feeling in that moment. right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not an unintentional sort of parallel or imagery that they're evoking. Mm-hmm. And the Summoning of Karadide really is able to utilize that really well, mm-hmm. because it is that kind of like what the kind of queer story, right?
Yeah.
So it's able to kind of like just balance these two things simultaneously.
There's so much going on with like the characters and their psychology and how that like layers itself into the horror and like the subtext of like this kind of like desire that you have for someone else, but it almost feels unnatural. And like you're kind of like horrified at yourself with it, but at the same time, there's a part of you that wants it and like trying to like figure that out. And then there's also this element in terms of like this toxicity to it, where it's not just like Hikaru is just like a sexual object. He's also this kind of like mourning thing. What the fuck is the main character's name? God damn it. Let me look this up real quick.
Gojo?
Gojo? Yeah, we're Gojo. No, fuck. Yoshiki. Yeah. Where it's also a matter of, like, not wanting to let go of Hikaru as well. I think I made, like, after we finished this episode, I compared her almost to, like Suma Sho in a sense. But now it's, like, also has this added layer of like, oh, also they're a monster, also this is gay now. So it's like there's so much like difficult stuff to untangle, and it's not something that is like even easy to like wrap your head around. Like, you can obviously like parse out the metaphors and understand, like, intuitively understand them, but in terms of like verbalizing, like, oh well, this is clearly an analogy for this, or this is a metaphor for this, doesn't really, it feels almost reductive to put it into words in a sense, because it's such like an indescribable feeling, if that makes any sense. Yeah, very Lynchian, like in that sense,
more of like pathos driven visceral sort of thing.
Yeah where it's like, I can't put this into words what I'm feeling, but this makes me feel and think about things in a very certain way, and you're able to draw these sorts of connections that you know it may not necessarily be easy to verbalize, but you can nonetheless intuit and understand how all of these different aspects are connected, and it feels very organic in how it achieves that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to season two.
I'm looking forward to season two. God damn it, if it doesn't end in season two, we're gonna have a problem, because that's what I've been saying, is like horror, this kind of horror, does not have longevity built into it, and I don't want to be fucking mystery bot. You better not turn this shit into Lost. I know the manga is still ongoing, so
I don't know what, like, you would do for another fucking 12 episodes after this.
After the next season
I know you can do like end it.
Yeah,
I don't know how you would continue this on for like multiple seasons.
No, two core, and then I think I said maybe like a movie at most, like to cap that's as much as you need. I think if you start getting like three core, or God forbid four core, then I'm gonna start feeling like I'm being strung along, and it's not really going like anywhere.
I don't know. Maybe we come back to this in a couple of years, and it's had like four seasons. And we're like, damn, that was really good for four seasons. I didn't know how they were going to do it.
And you know what?
But they did it.
Regardless, if it came, because the show looks fucking phenomenal. Like, all, like, we were talking about it, City. It's like, this is like the horror equivalent of something like Bocchi the Rock, where it's doing this weird media mix stuff. Like, this last episode, they're on like the train, and it's like an actual train that they like fucking went and filmed, and then they animated them into that. Stuff like that, like that weird sort of like mixed media stuff. Whereas Bojack uses that for comedy, this uses that for disgusting horror.
Yeah, but that was like using the ED, so that's cheating.
It was also used as part of the ED, which that was also like a nice payoff to like that the ED, where you kind of see like how that continues past that. And you're like, that's actually really clever. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Also, the opening for this show is fucking schizo, and it's not going to stop being schizo. It's so fucking weird. It's like so, like, it's like incoherent.
It kind of reminds me of like a Queen song or something.
Yeah, it was just very like in like the visual presentation is very maximalist. We're just doing all these different things. I don't really think they go together all that well, but goddamn it, if it's not fun to watch.
I should clarify. The beginning part sounds like a Queen song. Nothing after like the first.
Oh, like when it breaks into that chorus and just goes full J-rock. Yeah. But again,
yeah,
why does it go full J-rock? What the fuck is that? What is it doing? Why is this does not feel like it's like it's mixing like the like upbeat chords and like fast tempo and stuff with like other horror imagery. I'm like, what are we cooking here? What is going on?
You have like the zombies like raving out.
Yeah. but even if it can maintain like this level of production into a second season, let me take a look here. So it's the same director. It's the same director as Jellyfish, of course. And Aromanga Sensei, this is really funny to like say, because neither of those shows are remotely similar to this visually. You really like the opening of Oshin no Ko season 2, didn't you? Because he also did that.
Yeah,
I did like that opening. Who we got for like the animation directors and producers on here? So animation director and character designers.
Hot take, I like that more than Idol even. I think I talked about this when we talked about it. I like that OP more than OP1.
Okay, so
that's just me being a
Yuichi Takahashi. This actually makes a little bit more sense. So, yeah, he is also the character designer and animation director on the Mononoke movies and Blue Giant and stuff. So that Vivi, yeah, this tracks a little bit more in terms of the visual style of the show. Then what about the animation producer? What has he worked on? Apocalypse. Okay, so it's he's worked on Cygames stuff, and Cygames are quickly becoming one of the most compelling studios in the anime industry right now.
You say that, but then you also have like Cloverworks, which people also said the same thing. And
yeah,
like Wit, I guess, is still there.
Yeah, Wit's doing interesting stuff. Annie. You know,
there are a lot of studios that are like consistently putting out good stuff now.
Yeah.
I feel like before it was like two or three.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd have to. This is me.
Of course, you also have like, of course, Gohan's, Trigger, Science Otter. Like, yeah, there's a lot of like interesting, just almost like, and this is a dumb way to describe it, boutique studios, if that makes any sense.
No.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's studios that feel relatively small but have like a very like constant. They're not doing like the Toei or Sunrise or A1 thing where they're just or MAPPA now where it's so much shit is coming out. Bones would be another. They're not like a massive. They don't have like the feel like one of those like massive studios. Even though Cygames has put out 4 seasons worth of material between the 2 seasons of Umusume Cinderella Gray this year, Apocalypse Hotel, and Summer Hikaru Died. That fucking gacha money is hitting like crack, I swear to God. And then last year they fucking did the they did 2 Umusume movies, one of which we watched recently, and it was also fucking phenomenal. So
I mean, yeah, it pays for itself when you think about it.
Yeah,
because everyone started playing Bravern. They did Bravern, yeah. I mean, people started playing the fucking Umamusume games because of the series got, like, word of mouth, right? So it's like, you make a good anime, it gets word of mouth, people go check out your gacha game, it pays for your new anime.
Did you see the thing on, like, like the anime trending, you know, like the anime trending, like, ranking, like, charts that they do every season? Do you see what, like, Umamusume, Cinderella Great, it literally did the thing that Cap does in the races in the show, where it's like it's very behind in like the early part of the season, and then at the end of the season it just suddenly shoots, like when the game came out it just shot up to number one. It was really crazy to see. Like that's life imitating art right there. What the fuck, you couldn't. That's crazy. Speaking of horror, and you're playing Silent Hill F. How's that been going for you?
Been playing Silent Hill F. It is good. The worst part about Silent Hill F is looking up reviews and shit. And everyone is like,
why are you doing this to yourself? We were just talking about how much you hate Twitter. Like, video game discourse is like so much worse than anime discourse.
In a way, like, it sucks because, like, there are people, I feel like because the gaming space is so big, there are people that have, like, good insight into stuff, and, like, you can watch their stuff in a way that you can't really get as readily out of the anime space.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, that is not most videos. And so you click, like, oh, what is this Silent Hill F video? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Just seething about, like, feminism or something. Like, I don't understand any of that.
Like, all of them claim this position of, like, I love all these Silent Hill games. I love every Silent Hill game. This is not a Silent Hill game. I'm like, what is a Silent Hill game exactly? Like,
I guess it needs to take place in Silent Hill. Is this, like, an aesthetic
argument? No, they're, like, one of the videos I watched was not even saying that. Like, he was like, oh, it could be take place in Canada. That's fine. I don't give a shit. It's not, it's just not a Silent Hill game, which I think he was coming at it from, like, mechanically, because it has, like, a combat focus, or, like, I don't, that was really confusing. He's, like, saying that that was even less Silent Hill than the fucking, like, dungeon crawler CRPG fucking Silent Hill off the Vita. And it's like, the fuck? I'm not following. Because, like, upgrades and equipment and stuff, I guess, is what he was saying it for.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying it. I'm surprised that people are so put off by it, because it seems so fucking obvious what it's doing in, like, the opening scene to me. Granted, as much, like, shit as I've read on, like, anime and, like, Japanese culture and stuff for anime, maybe it's more apparent to, like, me than it would be your average Western player. Namely because, like, literally you're, like, in the opening area and there's, like, the little magazines and flavor text. I think I pinged you in one. Like, literally the first piece of paper I opened in the game is, like, talking about how there was, like, an onsen spring that, like, started gushing or whatever. And then, like, it was, had, like, a miasma to it. And, like, so there was, like, this toxic gas that was, like, putting people in the hospital. I was like, this is just Higurashi. What the fuck is going on?
Well, so that's the aspect to me that's more interesting. I haven't played it yet. I'm going to wait until I get, like, a new PC, but I wouldn't be coming at it from the framework of being a Silent Hill fan. I would be coming at it from the framework of being a Ryukishi fan. And I feel like the more obvious analog would probably be Higurashi, just given the setting of rural town in Japan. Umineko takes place on, like, an island and is also weird. Also, like, from what I understand, you have to beat the game, and then there's, like, more endings that you get, like, the more you beat the game or whatever, so you have to play through it multiple times. That's also, like, very, I mean, Higurashi, it's not, like, a game with, like, choices. It's just you read the fucking thing, and then...
I mean, that's in every Silent Hill game, though. Like, Silent Hill 2, you cannot get the leave ending, which is a good ending, but it's not, like, I don't think it's considered the best ending. You have to play multiple times. Like, Silent Hill 1, the original one, you have to, like, unless you just have, like, clairvoyance and you know exactly what to do by, like, reading a walkthrough or something, or you just happen to fucking do every single thing obsessively and autistically, you cannot get the best ending because you don't know to go talk to some specific person to get a specific item at a specific point that you had to, like, backtrack to go do. Like, it's not, like, something that's just intuitively something you would understand to do. You have to do that on your second playthrough for the most, like, as a general organic sense. So, like, this idea that, like, you could, like, oh, I'm not going to play the game multiple times. Why would I need to do that for the real ending? It's like, that's, like, every Silent Hill game. I don't.
Which reminds me of that action button video Tokimeki Memorial. He was, like, we were watching, where he was just trying to, like, get the fucking girl on the cover, and he had to play the game, like, 17 times in order to fucking do it perfectly, basically. And it's like, yeah, how are you supposed to do that without a guide? What the fuck?
Obsession.
Yeah, so
I've been really enjoying, like, from that aspect, I've not consumed any of Ryukishi 7's, like, other stuff. I haven't read.
Haven't seen or like Higurashi, read Higurashi. Yeah, so I'll play it. I'll get back to Umineko. Where they're just getting to the island.
Yeah, and it sets up the whole background or whatever. Like I literally started to read it, and I've never like just embarked on like a commitment to be.
They're really long, and I'm curious to see. Because I feel like I'm in a weird spot here because I'm scrolling through and I'm seeing people complain about like the gameplay or whatever the fuck. And I feel like I'm in a weird position now where I'm someone who doesn't really like video games with very heavy stories. That's not what I enjoy. But now I'm going to be playing a video game, not for the gameplay, but specifically for the story and for the writing, because I like Ryukishi and I think he's a really good writer. And I'm curious to see like how this works with him in a non-visual novel setting.
They have like a story mode version, like difficulty setting, where it makes it easier. Apparently there's like a balanced version. Apparently that's actually like hard mode or something. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so confused. I guess there's like a mode that unlocks when you like beat the game, but people are like complaining that they're playing on the hard mode or whatever, and they're like, it's not balanced or whatever the fuck. I'm like, really? Like, this is not that hard. I'm like, so I feel like I'm so disconnected from this fucking conversation.
We get it. You're the skilled older brother that I passed the controller to, so you can beat the level for me. We all know.
It's just weird because like these people play games all the fucking time, and I'm like if it's a cat, you know, someone that doesn't play games very often, I'm not ever gonna like judge you for saying something's hard. It's like, okay, that's fine, like you just don't play. But like if you have a YouTube channel and all you do is play games, I don't understand that. You know what I mean?
Okay, like, do you know who Darkseid Phil is?
Yeah.
this is actually just kind of the classic thing of game journalists suck at video games. So do YouTubers, as it turns out. You ever seen fucking like Ego Raptor try and play Ocarina of Time? It'll put that fucking Sequelitis video in a very different light, I guarantee you.
Probably not. I already fucking think that video sucks ass.
Oh, it'll make you hate it even more.
I feel like it just validate me and be like, yeah,
unironically try to fight enemies and like stun them with the hook shot constantly. It's like, what? Why? Just fucking hit it with a sword. What are we doing?
It makes me want, because I can see a lot of the Ryukishi stuff in it, just like aesthetically, in a sense of like, it deals a lot with kind of terminal villages.
From what I understand, this is like dealing more with like the feminist movement and like the like 50s and 60s. Like Higurashi, it's kind of a period piece, takes place in the like early 80s, though it makes some very funny anachronistic reference, like characters talk about playing like the PlayStation and stuff. It doesn't really fucking matter in terms of that, but there is like social concerns in terms of like, you know, the village is under threat because there's this like dam that they want to build. And, you know, if they build the dam, it'll flood the entire village. And so everyone has to like, you know, rally around and together. And it's like communal action against the evil Tokyoite oppressors and stuff, you know, things like that. You know, there's always been like that kind of political element to his stuff. So I would be curious to see how much of that is in Silent Hill F.
Well,
the main thing I would say about Higurashi though is that despite the reputation it may have as being this like subversive critique of moe, where it's not cute girls doing cute things, they're actually all fucked up and evil and want to murder you. It's such a dark critique. It's like, no, that's not. It's actually, you literally could not be more wrong. What the fuck are you talking about? This is like one of the most like humanistic things I've ever read. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
There's never been a fucking story I've seen where like that is just as unabashedly power of friendship. What the fuck?
People complain. I've seen a lot of complaints where people are saying that this is very anime feeling.
Let's fucking like
teen
go.
Drama.
Yes.
And I'm like, do you not? Like, I don't know. I feel like these people like played Silent Hill 2 and then maybe Downpour because people said it was going to be like Silent Hill 2 or something and nothing else. Because I'm like, what do you think Silent Hill 3 was about? Like, yeah, there's occult stuff, but like a lot of the stuff that ties back into her like horror or whatever is not that she's like a fucking murderer. She's not like a prisoner. She's just a teenage girl. Like the monsters represent like the split rail, the split worm or whatever that's in the subway is just a fucking phallic symbol. It's all about like rape or whatever the fuck. Yeah. The fucking big brute dudes on the subway are just body dysphoria shit. Like it's just all mundane, like teen girl kind of fears and apprehensions and all this shit.
Yeah.
This is like that. Like, yeah, it's not a unique thing, which is kind of the point. Like, it's not supposed to be unique.
Yeah.
Like I don't, people just have like this weird vision of what I think the games are supposed to be or the franchises. And it's like, dog, y'all are the reason why shit like fucking Fully Cooly Progressive exists. Because we had to like literally.
Well, see, that's the thing. Now I'm going to be coming in and I'm going to be the fucking tourist because I'm going to be playing because I like Ryukishi. So I'm going to be like, I don't know what Silent Hill is. I don't fucking care. I'm here for this man and he's a beautiful, wonderful person. And I love his work.
It reminds me of that Matthew Matosas video where he's talking about Portal 2 and how Valve did the playtest stuff. And they got really excited about this game mechanic that they had and like built the game around that or whatever. And everyone was just like, this is okay and all, but where's GLaDOS? Where's the portal gun? Where's the cake? And it's like, this is the most,
just like vapid, the most like superficial, like imagery and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Like ironically, the stuff that like people were criticizing Geekwax over.
Yeah,
like you can't. Yeah,
I engage with Fully Cooly almost as if it is like the sequel to Daikon 4. Right?
Yeah,
I am totally fine with that sort of separation where like, yeah, it references Daikon like 5 or whatever in Fully Cooly, but like none of it is Daikon similar 4, to fucking Daikon outside of like the sort of
The one and cut where Haruko is surfing on the guitar in the Playboy Bunny outfit, and that's it.
Like, it's the ethos of it, right? Silent Hill does not have like, it shouldn't be fucking Pyramid Head. It shouldn't be fucking it has to be this fucking I murdered my wife, but I have amnesia or so. Like, that's what fucking Homecoming did. Homecoming did the whole fucking stupid amnesia thing, and it was fucking dumb. Silent Hill Downpour did the fucking like prisoner shit. Like, that's not what makes a good Silent Hill. Like, they've gotten rid of the cult stuff, and then this thing does sort of the cults. Like, it's
gonna be interesting because there's like. There's like cult stuff in Higurashi, and then, I mean, Umineko just borrows a lot from like Western esotericism because otaku just be doing shit like that.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that they did kind of get rid of the occult stuff from the original Silent Hill four games, and they replaced that essentially with Shintoism. So like, but that plays a large part in it. Like, it's still a lot about like faith or whatever and religiosity in that sense, namely because it is like a small town. It is the 1960s.
Is that also just an aspect of Higurashi, you know, believing in like, you know, the local deity and stuff.
It's just annoying because like all this stuff is so fucking obvious to me from like the jump, essentially, like literally the first area. I mean,
that's one thing if you would ever criticize Ryukishi for is The man is not subtle. If you do not understand what he is talking about, you might be fucking stupid. He's like one of the most... He literally has bits at the end of every Higurashi chapter that you unlock where it's just him talking. It's just like an epilogue thing of just him being like, here are my thoughts right now. And he's just explaining to you what his intentions were. And it's obvious. Characters borderline break the fourth wall in Higurashi just explaining it and like the moral dilemmas and stuff.
I feel like we could like do a whole episode about this.
Well, that was the original plan when they announced it. Originally it was going to be like I would have already played through the rest of Higurashi and then Umineko when the game was announced.
No, you're not even close.
No, I still need to finish Higurashi. I started Umineko.
This is making me want to. It's not really like I kind of want to read Higurashi. It's making me kind of want to read Higurashi, but it's more making me want to watch fucking Miss Modern, like Hikaru-san, because they are very similar in like that sort of challenging of like societal norm or like in that time period specifically. So I'm like, oh, this would be like cool to watch for that kind of more of that context, right?
Yeah. Higurashi, even though it is like, you know, it's just a game that you read, again, there aren't any choices or anything that you really do apart from read it. It does also do a very good job at like making you feel very tense or like getting you into the mind of the character as like their mental state deteriorates, or putting you outside the mind of the character as their mental state deteriorates. And you're just kind of like watching this tragically unfold again, and you want to like reach in and stop it, but you can't. Again, there's Higurashi. Like we were talking about like Summer Hikaru died. Very tragic story. Higurashi also very tragic story when you actually start to like break it down. It is remarkably sad and poignant, despite the reputation it has as being like super like graphic and gory and stuff. It is like the reason I have not finished it is because the amount of emotional labor that I know that last arc is going to require of me is going to be like, I gotta be in the mood for that, and I need to like set time aside to be able to handle that, because otherwise it's gonna ruin my day, it's gonna ruin my week,
ruin my whole life. You become one of them.
I feel like you could probably get through Higurashi relatively quickly, even though it is like a long
me or
thing.
You're saying you generally?
No, you specifically.
Okay.
I feel like you're like,
why do you think that?
I don't know. I feel like you just feel like you just like lock in and be like, well, time to do my daily read. Like I've seen you like, how long did it take you to get through Vagabond?
Vagabond? About half a week.
Like Vagabond was fairly long and you got through that. Like, you were like, you would just focus on it, where for me, it was like, I was playing initially like an hour every day. And then it was like every other day and once a week. And then I picked up the game in a while. For the reasons I just explained. I feel like you would do better at that.
Yeah, maybe.
How's the music, by the way, in Silent Hill? I know you've always liked the composer.
It's not really stood out because it's more it's more time period appropriate. So there's not like a lot of like Spanish guitar or rock elements to it. It's very much more like ceremonial, traditional kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's not bad, but it's not like the second three games. How do you put the one outside? Like the first game's soundtrack is like good for the game, but it's not like something I listen to. But like 2, 3, and 4, I will just listen to the soundtrack on their own.
Yeah.
It's not quite on that level, but it's good.
Yeah. All right, now we gotta go watch Attack number 1.
Attack!